Hi, good morning, and welcome to Real Nurse Stories. Today on the show, I'm interviewing Jamie. Welcome to the show, Jamie. It's nice to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Eva. It's really good to be here.
You're very welcome. So, Jamie, if we could just start by perhaps telling me, if you wouldn't mind telling me a little bit about your role as a nurse and what you're currently doing.
Yeah, sure. So, I'm actually not working clinically at the moment, which is a new thing for me. So I've only just done that in the last few months. But I've been a registered nurse for the last nearly 10 years, so nearly a decade. And I've worked in many different areas. So I sort of started off in palliative care, worked in oncology for a little while, moved to a general surgical ward for a number of years and worked in sort of leadership positions there, and then moved to ICU. Did 2 years in ICU and then moved to ED. So majority of my career has been in the private system, and only in the last year or so I've moved into a public ED. So I've had a pretty good sort of breadth of experience. I think I've sort of managed to chop and change every couple of years, which I think has been really good and kept things fresh. Mm-hmm. and I've learned a lot obviously over the way about all the different sort of jurisdictions within the health system. So it's been really good. And then, yeah, in the last few months, I've gotten a job working for the Department of Health in Queensland. I am currently working in a sort of more of a administrative project management role. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do a lot of, it's a completely different job. It's such a change of environment, but I guess, the clinical experience that I do have in many different sort of jurisdictions has really helped to just have a bit more of a systems, perspective, systems understanding, and understanding the way that the actual healthcare system runs. And within that job at the moment, I think it's just a bit more of a broader sort of perspective over the way that everything, all the intricacies and nuances of the healthcare system. So it's been a very enlightening couple of months. And a really good, last decade of my career. It's been great.
Yeah. That's really interesting because you get such a different perspective, don't you, when you're working kind of with the Department of Health. You get to see the whole of health and understand the politics with small p and a big P.
In Queensland, we're in an election year this year. So, and obviously also I started about a month before COVID hit. So it was really interesting to see how a health system mobilizes to deal with a novel situation, a pandemic that we've never come across. So I've been really, I think in a way, quite fortunate over the last, year or so with some of the opportunities that have come my way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good experience to have as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your journey to become a nurse, Jamie. Where did that start and what kind of prompted you to think about nursing as a career?
It's one of those funny things. So yeah, probably I've been asked that question a lot over the years, and I don't know if I've got a really great answer for it, but I went straight into university after school. I knew that I liked the idea of having a social career that was, involved forming relationships and helping people. And I guess teamwork was also a big part of that I could see that working in health was generally a very team orientated sort of environment. Mm. And I went, I got into uni and I went over to Africa for a number of months as a very green 18-year-old straight out of school. And I think over there, I spent some time with, there was living in the same lodge that we were, and we were volunteering in an orphanage, and living in the same lodge where a number of doctors, most of them were sort of, still in their training. I think there are probably a few registrars, but they were working for Médecins Sans Frontières. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, there's a few that were on placements from universities over in the UK. And they were, you know, just very inspiring people, I guess. They had some really great stories, and hearing about the what was going on in Malawi. So I was in Malawi, and what was, you know, how their health system was working and some of the issues that they were coming across from on a day-to-day basis. And just, you know, being in a country that was, Malawi is a really happy, wealthy African country, but I guess being over there and sort of seeing, I think you just get a bit of a sense of, you know, of humanitarian, you know, desire, I guess. And being around those people was really inspiring. And I think that was probably one of the reasons why I just kept going with nursing. And I came home and I got a job in an aged care facility and, you know, straight into sort of the healthcare system. So since then, I've always worked in health. And I think I've had a number of really fortunate things happen to me across the way that have made, you know, that have led to a really great, interesting career. But also, I guess, yeah, just it suits my personality in a lot of ways.
That's great. That's a great kind of way to get into nursing, to start with that experience, because working, you know, in a different country or volunteering in a different country and seeing some of those issues kind of opens your eyes and broadens your horizons, doesn't it, too?
Yeah, absolutely. It does, for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, also when I got back, it was not too long after that, I got a job in a palliative care ward as a sort of nurse orderly. So sort of an assistant nurse. And again, I think that just reiterated to me how the sort of level of relationships that you can have in the career. And, you know, I mean, palliative care is a different kettle of fish to a lot of the other nursing that I've done in my career, but it's just so based on communication and relationships and rapport. And I think, again, that was just such a great place to start. And it gives you that basis, that sort of grounding foundation of, you know, of taking that sort of holistic approach. So I think, I've just had a couple of, lucky kind of breaks, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, that inspired you to want to go on and study and become a nurse.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So when did you know that you kind of want, did you want to specialize in something? Did you know that when you were doing your training or?
No, I had no idea. And, you know, I've just told you this great story about how I was so inspired by, you know, the working in healthcare and all these, you know, these different experiences that I've had. But for the most part of my first 5 years or so as a nurse, I wanted to just be a musician, and nursing was a backup plan. So I just, like I said, I had some really lucky, you know, some really great life experiences, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time a few times. But for the first half of my career, I was definitely, I had my brain in other places. but still, you know, managed to sort of be present enough to learn a lot. And it wasn't until I moved to crit care, so I really made that decision to go to ICU. I mean, I worked on that, on a surgical ward, for close to 5 years, so probably the majority of my career was actually spent there, which is interesting to think now. But and I worked as a CN there for a few years, and I think that taught me a lot about leadership and you know, viewing things from that point of view and how important leadership is. And it made me really appreciate how much I wanted to, you know, I wanted to know about leadership in a big sense. And so it also made me realize that I probably, you know, well, I mean, I wanted to know more. So moving to crit care definitely made me realize how little I did know at the time. So doing 2 years in ICU was incredibly enlightening. And then going to ED again was another real step forward for me, because I think if I was to specialize in any, you know, jurisdiction, it would certainly be ED. I've really enjoyed the last year or so there.
And what happened to the music dream? Is that still there?
Oh, you know, I'll go back to it one day, I reckon. I still dabble. I've got a couple of really lovely guitars. I as time permits, I still dabble, but it's just such a time consuming and energy consuming hobby that it's, you know, I'm on and off, but at the moment I'm quite happy to, I'm doing too much to be thinking about music for now, but yeah. I'll go back to it. Yeah.
One day.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
Now, you gave me a couple of topics that you wanted to talk about this morning, Jamie, on the podcast. I'm just going to go with the first one that you wanted to talk about, the role of positive psychology in the workplace. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and why that's important to you?
Yeah, well, I guess the background of that was I was during my study, so I'm studying a master's in leadership and health and human services. And one of the electives that I chose to do was a positive psychology in the workplace or positive organizational scholarship. So almost a branch of, you know, organizational psychology. And I didn't know, I kind of picked it as an elective because I thought it would be easy. And I was doing a lot at the time and I thought I'd be able to breeze through it. And it turned out to be probably the most interesting, most engaging for me personally subject I've done during the course of my study. And it was just, I think it's just, you know, it makes sense to me, this idea that positive communication leads to, you know, increased teamwork and increased, effectiveness of teams. But to read the actual literature and to really understand the actual, the studies that go on behind this that actually give this proper, what's the word?
Credibility,
credibility, thank you, was really, really interesting. And learning about, so there's the catchphrase that you get out of it is this, the idea of the Lysada ratio, which is just essentially it's a ratio of the amount of positive to negative forms of communication within a team can really affect the way that the team, you know, gets the job done. And and I can't remember what it is. I think it's 6 to 1 or 5 to 1, something like this. There's 5 positive, forms of communication to 1 negative is generally the happy number.
Okay.
Learning about this just makes you reflect a lot on your own workplace. And I think I, at the time, just thought a lot about how we communicate with each other in the healthcare industry. And it does, obviously, it depends, you know, on your workplace largely. But we tend to, and this is another sort of, you know, this is almost a bit of a philosophical branch off the side of this, but we tend to, in health, we tend to recognize negative outcomes a lot more readily than we probably recognize positive outcomes. And there's a whole heap of different reasons for that. But it is documented that there is a bit of a negativity bias potentially in healthcare. And the reason for that is because, you know, you need to learn from mistakes. So when there is negative outcomes, as a system, we need to learn from it so that we ensure that that doesn't happen again. But the converse of that is that we then focus too much, I think almost sometimes, on the negative, you know, negative outcomes and not enough on the positive outcomes.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is to do with the fact that when people have positive outcomes, they move on and they leave the system because they, you know, we've nursed them or we've essentially whatever, we've cured them back to good health. And they leave the system and then we don't ever get to see the follow-up of that. So they leave the system, they don't come, a lot of the time they won't come back. And every so often, you know, you're working on a ward, you'll get those long stay patients that take the time out of their day to come back and say thank you, or, you know, they come back to touch base with the nursing staff that they've developed relationships with. But a lot of people wouldn't, because once you've left, you're probably pretty happy to leave for the most part. So coming back is not necessarily, you know, something that happens. And so Yeah, I think this ties in with the concept of positive psychology for me was that we probably should be taking a bit more effort to identify where positive results happen and to communicate it back to the staff that have worked, you know, that have executed their skills and done their jobs in order to achieve that positive result. Mm. So I guess that's actually sort of taken up a lot of my brain space over the last few years, trying to figure out how to you know best influence that.
And that's really interesting. I mean, I haven't heard of that ratio, the Lozado ratio, but as you're talking, I'm actually thinking about, you know, it's so true that we kind of see everything in health, and we, you know, see people come into hospital sometimes in a very bad way, and we don't always, they go home, you know, they recover, and we don't get to know beyond that really what happens. And I wonder how much of that is also about our health services not necessarily being connected, you know, in terms of primary care. Yeah. And because my own experience from working in the UK, I worked very much in for some of my career in the community, and we would have in reach, you know, we would go into the hospital, we would talk to the staff, we would follow the patient home, and there was a lot of rewards in that, but it doesn't seem to happen in the same way, certainly in Perth. You know, I think things are improving, but there's not that close working or connection. So
that's a really great point, actually. You know, consumer engagement, I guess, is possibly, well, it's difficult to, like, it's, I was going to say it's possibly lacking, but it's a very, it is a complex issue, and it's difficult to really get good processes in place. But yeah, I mean, I guess it also just depends on your, where you're working, you know, the different areas. And probably when I moved to ICU was when I really started to think that there was a need for this change, because when you're working in ICU or ED, you see people at their absolute sickest. Yeah. And enormous amounts of resources and, you know, energy is spent to work on people and get them healthy again. Mm. And often when they leave, they definitely don't come back to those sorts of areas. They're really high acuity. They're, a lot of the time, also people are in delirium for most of the time that they're there, so they don't really get a chance to actually, you know, form relationships with people that looked after them. And they can be quite intimidating environments for patients or you know, community members to walk into. Mm. So I think a lot of the time you never see that follow-up. But what you do see is the people that don't get better, that just get, you know, that have these really awful periods of, you know, long-term sort of periods of getting sicker and sicker, and then, you know, potentially even sort of passing away in front of the staff that have been working on them for, you know, so long. So
yeah,
I think that was moving, you know, that was when I really started to put that kind of thought together of, you know, how do we better communicate this, the positive outcomes, so that you can actually recognize them, you know, in these sorts of areas. Mm. Because it can be, it's pretty fatiguing, and this is, you know, this has actually turned into a bit of a research project for myself, but so I've done a fair bit of literature reviews on the subject, and there's a lot to suggest that there's, you know, really high incidences of PTSD in critical care environments, and really high incidences of professional burnout, but there's not a whole lot of research to suggest that positive outcomes have, you know, that the communication of positive outcomes could potentially, you know, affect this. So I'm and sort of on a little bit of a mission at the moment.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, you know, I work a lot with nurses around resilience, and resilience comes from kind of the positive psychology basis. But it, again, one of the components of being resilient is about having that balance. And if we take ICU as the example, particularly at the moment with COVID, you know, that's I would think, intensified the number of very sick people who are coming in and being cared for, and not all of those are going to recover. But having that balanced perspective to know that actually the hard work and the effort and the energy that goes into the nursing care, you know, for every person sadly who may not recover, there is equally someone who will, and being able to almost celebrate that is a factor that can help somebody with their own resilience and have that balanced view. Because I would think, not that I've worked in ICU, but I would imagine it's even more challenging currently given what's happening.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know how you feel about this either, but I do feel a little bit like, you know, while obviously there's, you know, there's many great things about general culture of nursing, but I think one of them is that we're pretty good at giving, you know, feedback to people when they're not doing things well, but we're probably not that good at propping people up when they are doing well. And it does, again, it depends on the workplace. And like I have recently in the last few years been working in a workplace where there is such an emphasis on building others up that it's become absolutely ingrained in the culture. And, you know, people that you can see would be potentially quite negative in a different environment are incredible leaders in this environment, because they're given, you know, given permission to be positive in the way that they communicate. And it's actually been an awesome case study for me to see how this really works on the front line. And you can really see that, good leadership that puts an emphasis on positivity and building others up can make a massive influence on the culture of the workplace.
Absolutely. And it's not costly either, Jamie. You know, it's literally, you know, understanding about positive communication, how to do it, you know, having opportunities to shadow and mentor, and it's not costly, but it reaps such huge rewards for the health and well-being of staff. And I think that's my, you know, personal kind of wish, if you like, that we, you know, by having those kind of approaches, that we don't get to the point where we see staff completely burnt out, having to take time off and often not coming back to that same position because, you know, they were depleted on so many levels. And I think that shouldn't happen. We know enough to know that there's different ways of doing things. Yeah, and I think organisations who embrace that are, as you rightly say, the ones who are, you know, making a real positive difference in terms of leadership.
Yep, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
How did you implement some of what you learned, Jamie, into practice? Were there things that you actually changed as a result of what you learned? Okay.
So the question is, how have I changed my practice based on sort of what I've learned? So, I mean, like I said, it is difficult to put a finger on exactly what how you do change things. But I guess maybe one way that I've probably personally changed is to try and not view things competitively in the workplace. I don't know if that's probably what everyone else would have, how they would change their practice, but it's easy to get caught up in the hustle and competing with others for, you know, positions, and you sort of end up competing with others for recognition as well. And I think a big thing about what I've learned in the last few years in working in a culture that's you know, positive is just that, you know, because like other people doing good things actually builds the whole workplace up, and it makes it easier to get sort of innovation done and to get improvements done within the workplace. And I think you can tell when young nurses feel empowered to pick other people up around them, you can always tell that really influences the workplace. So I think, and the best way probably to lead in that sense is to lead by example. And I've certainly been led by example from other leaders that do exactly the same.
Mm.
And when you start to, probably a classic example and something that's probably really relatable is a good mentor of mine helped me out by sharing her resume with me. And she just, she just gave me her CV and said, now make yours look similar. Like, and when she did that, I was like, this is great. And it really helped, really helped me out to be able to sort of, go in and just change the layout and sort of word things in the same way that she did. And then I sent her a draft and she sent me some feedback and really just helped me to shape my CV in a really positive way.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't long after that, that I sort of had the same opportunity to do the same for someone else. And I probably hesitated to begin with. And then, and I don't know, I'm sort of, a little bit embarrassed to say that I have hesitated, but I think it's quite common that people would feel like, once you've got something good, you sort of feel like you don't necessarily, like it becomes your competitive advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a big thing now, that I've changed is to absolutely just not even second guess that and just help build other people up as much as possible. And if that means that they, for an example, if that means that they get an opportunity that you might have if you didn't help them out, I think that's great. I think that means that, it's just paying things forward, and I think it's a really positive way to go about your career.
I think that's such a great example. I had a conversation with somebody recently who was giving an example where she perhaps might have taken something personally in the past, where that situation where you've had a conversation and somebody can put the idea forward as theirs rather than acknowledge that it's yours.
Yeah.
And she said she's done some work on herself and her leadership development, and her comment was that she was very gracious in this person had kind of promoted her idea, and whereas she would have previously thought, hey, hang on, that's my idea, she kind of let it go and thought, well, okay, that person must have thought my idea was good because they've taken it forward.
And that's so common. Again, I think recently my attitude has changed towards just being, trying to constantly reiterate to myself that, it doesn't matter how it gets done, it doesn't matter who gets credit for it, as long as we're, as long as I'm contributing to something that's actually getting over the line, that's helping, to sort of shape the system, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's a great way to think, Jamie. I think we need to cultivate more of that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
What's the most difficult part of being a nurse, Jamie?
Most difficult part of being a nurse. I mean, it's a pretty great job. It's challenging. It's cognitively challenging. It's emotionally challenging. You can have some. I guess probably for me, the most difficult part of being a nurse would just be if you're working in a toxic culture, because it's such a team orientated workplace. It can really bring you down if you're in a negative place.
Mm.
I'm sure that's the same in just about every career. But I guess, I think again, I'm probably just stressing the importance of a positive culture for the development of staff and for the well-being of staff. I just think it's really, really crucial. And I mean, you could say that there's plenty of other challenging things about being a nurse, but challenging doesn't necessarily mean difficult. I think difficult comes in the relationships and the, the navigating of the workplace and it can be, and I guess maybe actually the challenging parts of nursing are amplified when you're in a culture that isn't building you up into a resilient, strong individual. Mm. Because it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle. If you've got a poor culture, then all of those challenging aspects become harder and harder to deal with. Mm. So when you've got a positive culture, the challenging sides of being a nurse is, it becomes a lot easier to deal with. You're dealing with other people in a manner that actually gets it done in a good way as well. So
yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's a challenging job in itself, but if your culture isn't supporting you, that just amplifies that challenge more, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
How do you manage your kind of health and wellness, Jamie? Do you have particular things that you do that keeps you kind of resilient in your work?
When I was a bit younger, I think when I learned about mindfulness and when I'm saying younger, I mean a couple of years ago, really. Mm. But mindfulness was a big shift in the way that I approached work. And I guess maybe at the time I was working in a culture that wasn't terrible, but it was just, I was finding it pretty difficult. Some of the relationships and some of the, nuances of the workplace were quite challenging. And I think having mindfulness and just appreciating what I was actually trying to achieve every day, and, I'm not going to work to play politics. I'm going to work to, help people and to contribute my skills to sort of, help nurse people to good health, and, really just reassuring and sort of understanding exactly what my why was. And that was a great book Finding Your Why.
Simon Sinek.
That was probably a real game changer for me, to just shift my focus on what I was trying to achieve on a day-to-day basis and really understanding actually what I was setting out to do. And I guess, debriefing has always been a thing, something that comes really naturally to me. So I'm a talker generally. Mm. I like to talk things through, and I like to talk it through from a clinical perspective so that we can understand it and learn from it, but also just try and, debrief on an emotional level as well. I think that's probably helped to develop resilience. And then, I feel like I had another thing to say, but I can't remember what it was. But anyway, you can edit that out.
But I love the way that you describe mindfulness as like a positive intent. So you're almost kind of going with that. Today is going to be a good day. It's going to be positive. You're thinking about all the good things before you actually get there, rather than thinking, the opposite to that. I think is a really great way to start kind of the day, really, because often I think people maybe struggle a bit with mindfulness. We talk about it a lot, but what does it actually mean, and how do you do it if you're a busy nurse, working shift work? And I think how you describe that, setting that positive intention is really a helpful way of helping people to see, it's not complicated. It's those simple tweaks that you can make in your day-to-day routines that help you to.
Yeah, they can make a real big difference for sure.
Yeah.
Reflections. Sorry, Eva.
It's all right. You go.
I was going to say reflections the same. Having good and I admittedly I don't. I've tried and when I do, I can feel that it really helps, but it's one of those things that really takes a proactive approach to actually write down reflections on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And when you've got children and you're working shifts and everything, it can be difficult to sort of find the time, but it can be so helpful to and if I've ever had a really heavy shift at work and something's happened that I've found that has been quite traumatic, then I will come home and open a Word document and just write it with the intention that no one else is going to read it. It's just purely my thoughts on what's happened. And that can really help to just, it's almost another form of debriefing.
Yeah, I think we need to be using technology in a smarter way, because so many nurses say the same thing about reflection. You know, it's a powerful tool, but it's the time that it takes. Mm. And you just think, you know, I'm sure we could come up with an app that, you know, you could talk into that does it and types it or whatever. You know, there must be better ways that we can capture reflections.
You may be onto something there.
But it's just, I saw a wonderful post that I actually shared, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and it was talking about, it's Indiana University Health, and they have this big poster at the entrance to their hospital that states very clearly about, please take responsibility for the energy that you bring in, you know, to this space. And I just thought, that's such a great message for everybody, you know, staff, patients, visitors. I think it is.
I think I saw that as well. And I couldn't agree more. It is such a good message.
So Jamie, knowing what you know, and all the kind of the studying you've done, the experience that you've had as a nurse, what advice would you give to a young nurse just starting out in their career?
I guess trying to really drive home the idea of mentoring would probably be one of the big things that I would probably tell myself, as you know, from an early on stage. And it took me years and years to feel comfortable enough to reach out to someone who I thought could, you know, could meet with me in a mentoring capacity. Mm. And then it took me probably years after that to actually start saying that I had mentors, rather than just, you know, having meetings with people that I looked up to. And it takes, you know, you got to be a bit proactive, but people love to impart knowledge. And probably this goes back to, you know, another habit that I've probably developed is it really gives me resilience to help other people, to see other people grow and to see other people, you know, develop resilience and to develop in their career. Like, it really gives you a sense of, not achievement, but a sense of, what's the word?
It's like seeing somebody develop, isn't it? Develop their skills and grow as a person through mentorship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, like I said, I think it just takes a while to feel comfortable enough to reach out to people. But I've really seen and again, this is probably a direct, it's directly come from really good leadership from the top up at my current workplace. Mm. You see these young nurses start, these graduate nurses that have been told and given the permission straight off the bat to find a mentor, you know, find a couple of mentors and meet with them, like call, you know, text them or email them and ask them to have half an hour of their time and literally just meet with them to talk about how things are going and, you know, where you might be in a few years. And, you know, this is such awesome permission to give young people to go and seek that advice. And I think if I'd had that when I was starting out, I think it would have just been so beneficial to just start to understand where you sit and, you know, where you might be in a couple of years. And that was a big thing for me, is I couldn't see a career pathway when I was younger. Because I just didn't know the system well enough. I didn't know what was available and what might, you know, suit me. Or so it took me a lot of time to figure that out. And I think, you know, mentoring is a big way that you can open up some perspectives in that sense.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just probably also I tend to see some younger nurses getting stuck in a workplace. Not necessarily being happy in that workplace. And I think I've really tried to encourage people to just understand that most people have one of the reasons for becoming a nurse is because it's flexible and there's so many options and you can go and experience so many different things. And it can be, because it's quite scary when it takes a number of years to get comfortable. And by the time you get comfortable, then you almost don't really want to move on anymore. But I try to really encourage people to challenge themselves in their early years to just go and get some broad experience and go and work in many different places, because it sets you up really well for having variety, and it opens up so many options down the track. I think
I've always that's so true. There's a fabulous quote that says there's no growth in the comfort zone and there's no comfort in the growth. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know the quote, but it's so true. It's so true. I've never been one to like comfort zones particularly.
No. And so many people that I've interviewed say it's the same. You know, I think the last interview that I did was exactly the same message from a nurse who'd never worked in a place long enough to acquire long service leave. And, you know, I think I, in my circle, knew somebody who used to say, you know, it's good to move on every 2 to 3 years, any more than yeah. that, and you start to become, you know, feet under the table, too comfortable, and you don't grow. And I think that's so true. But then I think more so here, interestingly, I've observed in Australia, nurses seem to stay longer. And that, some of that is tangled up with long service and, you know, losing that perhaps if you move, depending on your employer, perhaps doesn't always facilitate that. But I agree, I think it's good to expand your skills and try different things and learn new things, and that's what, you know, gives you that great insight and experience, really.
So it'll ultimately help you get to a point where you actually want to be, you know, later down the track. And you might try something and not like it, but the beauty is that then you can move on. And I don't think what I try to tell people is that I don't think, you know, generally people don't hold it against you if you've been around the traps and, you know, tried some different things. Mm. And like you said, I think there's probably a bit of a, the sweet spot is 2 years or so, I think, I think before 2 years, you're not probably, you haven't been exposed to enough in that environment, but I think if you're keen to try different things, I think, you know, 2 years is a pretty good golden rule, I reckon.
Yeah.
Look out, you know, seek out some other things.
What would you most like to be remembered for in your career, Jamie?
Being someone who builds others up, I think, is probably a really good, you know, good place to start, and someone who actively helps to, you know, engage others and builds others up. And I think that really that just comes back to it. That's how you improve a system, is by, you know, improving the people that work within it. So, I'd love to be someone who's sort of recognized as someone who's positive and helps to define a culture.
And I think that comes across as very strongly when you talk, Jamie. I mean, it's threaded, that positive approach is threaded throughout everything you've said today, in terms of, you know, your mindfulness, how you approach things. Just, and the good thing about positivity is it's infectious.
I think it is.
And I think that's...
But you know, that's the, you know, what you've just said is so perfect, because the reason I'm like this is because I've sort of, you know, I've seen others act like this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've seen other great leaders, you know, acting like this. And so that's really influenced me a lot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great way to be. And we kind of need to grow more of that in nursing. I think it's, you know, a lot of things still need to change, but change can start small and start with one person and grow from there. And I think that's just a great positive, actually, to kind of finish your interview today on that great note, because I just wish more people were infected with positivity. It would make life so much easier for so many nurses, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I also should probably just, you know, I'm not positive all the time.
Well, I know. But I think it's an approach you bring. That's the difference. You set out with that intent and you've experienced how that can work in a workplace and model that yourself. And those are the important components. I know that in the real world, we can't all be positive all of the time. And that's totally fine. But it's your approach that makes the difference and matters.
Well, I would say the same about you, Eva. You know, just doing this podcast, the reason for doing this is just to have that conversation and to socialize these ideas. And I think it's really important that we do this more from a nursing perspective. I don't think there's that many people doing this from a nursing perspective. No. So I really appreciate what you do as well. And like I said, it just enables us to get this, to have these conversations and to talk about maybe some different ways of approaching things. So
thank you, Jamie. It's nice to have feedback, because that's the intent, as you know, is to share and give a platform to nurses, because I think there's a real need for it. So that's great feedback, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you today. I've learnt a lot, actually. I'm going to go away and do some reading up about the Losado ratio.
Yeah,
because I'm curious. Yeah. So
it's very interesting.
That's been great, and lots of positive things there to take away. So thank you, Jamie, for your time today and for sharing your story.
Awesome. No worries. Thank you very much for having me, Eva.
You're welcome.